Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Discover how you can take charge of the all-new Corsa E on opel.ie.
Now, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin's apology on behalf of the state regarding mother and baby homes yesterday was both welcomed and criticised by survivors, campaigners and politicians. Galway West TD Catherine Connolly's contribution following the apology got huge attention, and she joins us on the line now. Good morning to you, Catherine Connolly.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. You were not satisfied with the report. You were not satisfied with the response. Can you just tell our listeners what your own sentiment is around the whole thing this week and today?
Well, I suppose when I hear you introducing me as having made extraordinary comments yesterday, that might capture our reaction to this. I wouldn't have thought my comments were extraordinary yesterday. I thought they were a mixture of reaction and reflection, because I, in contrast to the survivors, had got a copy of the report or the summary 22 hours beforehand. I understand the survivors got it yesterday in the post. And remember, the webinar was done on Tuesday. So the first thing is, I don't think there was anything extraordinary about my comments. I think I tried to be fair and analytical as best I could in the time given. To hold a webinar and not give the report to survivors, bearing in mind that the government and the minister has it since the end of October, that's unacceptable. That's not treating survivors with respect, and it doesn't bode well, actually, for confidence.
They just had access to it online at that point.
They had no access to it online at that point.
Oh, did they not? Okay.
No, they were in it. This has happened repeatedly with the message from the government that the media have captured. And I want to get onto the substantive points in a minute, but it's really important to capture the message that was given here, that the survivors would be treated with respect, treated with equality. And instead of that, they got a webinar with no report in their hand. They got the report yesterday. They were left struggling with the internet on Tuesday after the webinar to access a 3,000-page report. So I understand from speaking to some of the survivors that they've got the report now. Mm-hmm. I understand that some of the TDs still haven't the summary, but that's one. Now let's go to the substance of this.
Yeah.
This is a commission that was set up in February 15. So we're almost 6 years down the road and the report has been published. The testimonies from the survivors jump and scream from the pages in terms of what they suffered and what they endured. And bear in mind that we're only talking about a small sample of people who came before the commission. 500 and something, I think, attended the confidential. And 1,000 was mentioned yesterday. It was nowhere near 1,000. This report is based on a small group of people. And that's not the problem of the commission. I'm simply putting the report in context and perspective. So they came forward, and we have little extracts of their testimony here in this summary. And what jumps out, and I've said this morning on another show, the innocence of the women, the complete absence of any knowledge on sexuality, not to mention sexual abuse and rape. So if we stick first with the innocence of that, and then we look at their stories, the rape perpetrates all of the pages, sexual abuse. And then you look at the conclusions drawn by the commission, and they tell us in paragraph 8 that there was no evidence that women were forced to enter mother and baby homes by the church or state authorities. Now, that for me is an extraordinary, and I happily use the word extraordinary in relation to that conclusion, because it bears no connection to the testimony given by the women and men that came forward. How they could have drawn that conclusion is beyond my capability.
Mm-hmm.
It's also beyond my capability that they found that there was no evidence of forced adoption. That is totally out of line with the evidence given by the women and the men. Now, if we're talking about respect, and if we're listening, and we listen to survivors, and then we put a different conclusion on what they've told us, that's difficult. That's difficult to accept.
Just to let people know some of what you said as well, you said the report is inconsistent, shocking, poorly written, disturbing, and you said you find the whole thing absolutely repulsive, to tell the truth. Very,
absolutely.
Very strong words.
Absolutely strong words for what happened in our society and is continuing to happen in terms of the narrative. So I've had the privilege of having different backgrounds, both as a psychologist and a barrister. And I have an ability to listen, although my family tell me I haven't. But I have an ability to listen when necessary. And it's not the stories that upset me. Dif- difficult as it is to listen to the stories, it is the narrative that has been put on those stories by the powers that be. And what jumps off the pages for me when you read it, amongst many things that jump off the pages, are the imbalance of power. And I said yesterday, amongst the, what you're quoting, I said it was the powerful against the powerless. And that's exactly what it was. I am not singling out the nuns. Quite the opposite, actually. They were part of a system, of a powerful system, the church, with a deferential, to put it mildly, by the powers that be, the various governments and the local authorities. That's also in the report. And I welcome those facts that are in the report. If we look, for example, at Tuam, just as one example, it distinguishes itself by being one of the worst in the country. It was a former poorhouse. And it became a mother and baby home. The conditions were appalling. That's the report saying that. That was owned by the county council. So here we have the county council owning that. The county council had meetings in there. Now, who had the meetings, I'm not sure. But the actual institution had meetings, whether that was officials or the health committee. But they actually had meetings in the institution. The manager decided. The manager of the time decided if a mother had a second baby, that it was into the Magdalene that mother would go and not into the mother and baby homes. It jumps off the pages that these institutions were for reform, to reform the women who had sinned. And if they sinned more than once, God help them. The words repentance and reform is used. And yet the commission finds that there was no evidence that they were forced into institutions. The priest figures strongly in a lot of the stories told. The doctor figures strongly, on occasions the solicitor. And if a woman went, not if a woman, there are stories where a woman went to a GP and the GP phoned the priest. And what's ignored completely and utterly is the context of how power is wielded in terms of silence and shame. Okay. That silence and shame was imposed on the women, where sexuality, normal sexuality, was frowned upon by a church that had a perverse attitude, some of them, to sexuality. And we know that from the reports that I mentioned yesterday.
And so, what is it that you expected from the report, and what is it lacking?
I think what really got to my soul was the narrative and the leak to the papers by the government, and then the narrative that we were all responsible, as if it was spraying water. Now, spraying water can be useful, but the spray is not good when you're talking about responsibility. So when you spray it amongst all of us, nobody is responsible. And I certainly wasn't responsible, and I'm only using myself as an example, and I'm intimately connected on a family level with this story. Also professionally, as a former barrister, so I've had the privilege of knowing it on every level.
Do you want to tell us about that family connection?
I don't actually. Actually, no. What I want to do is to look at a report that came before us that wasn't given to survivors. I want to look at the narrative that's in that, the internal inconsistencies, the use of language. That it's as if a number of people wrote the report. So we have survivors coming forward. They were mothers and children. That's who we're talking about. So they're referred to as the witness, the next witness, a birth mother, an adoptee. This type of language. They were all mothers. They were all children. That's number one. Then number two, we have commentary in it that's unnecessary. For example, they use the word, now just to counterbalance, and they put in a positive story. So there's a commentary in here that's not helpful at all. Now, perhaps it's the terms of reference that were given. And if you remember that Enda Kenny gave a speech in the Dáil in 2017, mm-hmm. to which I reacted to at the time, and he said, no nuns or priests came in the middle of the night to take our children. Now, that is the commentary again in the conclusions here, despite the evidence, despite the commission setting out some of the evidence themselves. The narrative is still the same, that nobody came to take our children. Yes, they did. And they did that through silence, shame, embarrassment, and making it absolutely impossible. And let me just, I'm not sure how long I've left, but let me just look at one paragraph, and you might just capture why I feel so strongly about this. Page 14, fleeing to Britain. Many pregnant women fled to Britain to protect the secrecy, only to face the prospect of being returned to Ireland against their wishes. There's absolutely no elaboration of who forced them to come back to Ireland, but forced they were. They call it repatriation in another place. And then, there is no known instance where a substantial number of pregnant single women fled their country. And then, this is what's really significant. These mothers were called pregnant from Ireland, PFIs, pregnant from Ireland. And the only time that the word inhumane or inhuman is used by this commission is in relation to how they were treated on the English side. So,
who refers to them as PFIs? The report itself?
The report captures what they were called when the mothers went to England by various British Catholic Charities put considerable pressure on the Irish hierarchy and on the government to repatriate the women. Some of the treatment meted out to these women, and this type of word, these women again, you know, this inconsistency of language to these women who were commonly described as PFIs, pregnant from Ireland, was inhumane and occasionally it placed them at medical risk. Now, the only time that I see that those phrases used, inhumane and at medical risk, is in relation to the women who were repatriated. In where the two Catholic charities talk to each other, nowhere is the word inhumane used, subject to me checking the full report, in relation to how women were treated in county homes and mother and baby homes.
So given what you've said, how do you assess what might happen now as a result of this report being published and the recommendations therein, and the fact that the government have committed to following through on those recommendations, and ultimately the redress that will be given to these survivors? Do you believe that enough will be done now to help them deal with the aftermath of this, which, as we know, is intergenerational?
I think, if I could, I'd come to that. Just look at the figures, 56,000, and they use the word unmarried mothers. There's no need to use that word. 56,000 mothers and 57,000 children went through the 18 institutions examined in this report in a particular period of time. Listen to those figures. 9,000 deaths in mortality rates out of the ordinary, known to the local authorities, known to the department, known to the government. Now, the point I want to make about that, they're sample. The 14 mother and baby homes were the largest, but there were others. The county homes are only an example. There were only a sample of them. So here we have a sample. And of that sample and those numbers, somewhere between 500 and 700 came before the commission. What do I want done? I want a recognition of the suffering that women, boys and girls endured, number one. I want a recognition that we cannot continue with the patriarchal, patronising attitude that dominated yesterday, and particularly the commentary in the papers. A leak should have never happened. The survivors should have been given the report before any of us. They should have had time to reflect. Now, before we move on, Claire, there has to be a recognition of that. This wasn't a technical blip. This was a deliberate policy, because they did not trust the survivors to leak, so they leaked. They decided they would determine the narrative,
and we know
with the media.
You know, there's an investigation happening into that issue to give the government its due. And the Taoiseach issued an abject apology. And we know that a number of orders, including the extraordinary statement we've had from the Bon Secours nuns who ran Tuam, that those apologies were issued yesterday. It was an abject apology, saying on numerous occasions throughout that statement, we failed, we didn't adhere to our Christian values. I mean, this is having a response. It is resulting in some change happening.
I welcomed the apology yesterday. I put the apology in context. I welcomed the apology from the nuns from Tuam. It was a fulsome apology. I have no difficulty acknowledging that. My difficulty is, one, the narrative. My second difficulty is my experience of what's happened with previous reports and previous promised actions. For example, Cara Nua, which was anything but a new friend. Cara Nua, and I've gone into that in the Dáil, similarly with the Magdalen Laundry, described by the Ombudsman as maladministration. So I would have expected, and I still expect, when the Taoiseach is talking again, that he will set out clearly, we did it wrong before, we will learn now, and we will do it right. That's
Catherine,
what I would like.
Catherine, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. Catherine Connolly there, TD. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.